Deplorable Nation, a podcast where your voices can be heard, where things that affect you and your family are important, because it's important to all of us. Every one of us matters and everybody has a voice. We're going to be bringing you news, current events, and throw in a lot of humor. And then you decide for yourself. Hello and welcome to another episode of Deplorable Nation. This is episode 19, titled Mother Knows Best. And I just want to say, welcome back, all of you listeners. I'm your host, Deplorable Janet, and today I have the most special guest. And it's going to be a pleasure for me to do this because this is literally one of my favorite goobers in the whole wide world and one of my weirdos in crime. So everybody, please give a warm welcome to my daughter, Kirsten. How the hell are you doing today, you sexy mofo?
I am just peachy. I really enjoyed that introduction.
Why, thank you. I'm so glad that you agreed to join me today. Because
Thank
I think
you
it's
for
really,
having me.
I'm so excited about it. It's important for the listeners to like get inside my brain sometimes, even though that could be kind of dangerous. So, what was it like growing up with me?
Honestly, you were probably the coolest mom. You are definitely the coolest mom out of all of my friends' parents. Our house was pretty popular when I was growing up. I had a lot of friends over all the time. You were really relaxed, and we were always very open and honest with each other. We were able to have a lot of good conversations, and I think that really helped me kind of grow up a little bit faster and mature faster than a lot of the people around me. But it was I had a great childhood.
So let me ask you, kind of a weird question, I guess. But when you were young, did we discuss topics that sometimes made you uncomfortable?
I don't know if uncomfortable is the right word, but we definitely talked about a lot of health-related topics, especially since you were a nurse and I was always interested in the healthcare field. We watched a lot of different shows, like Trauma, Life in the ER, and Forensic Files. And we had a lot of discussions when I was young and growing up about like sexual health, sexual education. And I think that those conversations were really important to have. And I guess they could be kind of uncomfortable when you're growing up. But now that I'm older, I don't think it's uncomfortable. But probably as like a 13-year-old, it was pretty fucking weird.
Just going to say, it's really fucking weird for adults sometimes to have those conversations.
Yeah, that's true. But those conversations are important.
Hey, you know, you remember that commercial? No, no, don't touch me there. That is my no-no square.
Is that a real commercial?
It is a real commercial.
That was something we used to say to each other. That sounds weird. Oh, God.
This is going to be the best show ever, I swear.
Oh, no. You better buckle your seatbelt.
I know, right? Buckle up, buttercup. I consider you like my best friend, not just my daughter. Is that weird for you?
No, I don't think that's weird. I think you're one of my best friends too.
Don't we talk like every day? Like is there anything ever in the world that you feel like you can't tell me?
No, I definitely feel like I could tell you anything and everything. You're probably the one person in my life, one of the few people, I'd say you and Brett and Catherine, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably it. Mitzi, but does he count? I don't know.
Mitzi's a cat, by the way. So yes, she takes after her mom because we both talk to our animals like they're humans. So, like when you were young, did you think I was like a fun weird or just like a complete weirdo?
I would definitely say that you were a fun weird. Like, we have a lot of good times together. And if we weren't as weird, we wouldn't have had as much fun. I totally believe that.
I agree. And you remember, I was telling somebody the story last night, because I'm like super into music. And so we went to a concert together one time. Do you remember when we went to see Blink 182?
Yeah, and My Chemical Romance.
Yeah. And you were like,
I remember that.
I stood up and I was dancing and you're like, Mom, stop it. You're embarrassing.
I definitely remember that. I've been telling like my friend, like Catherine, about how we used to go to a lot of concerts when I was growing up.
Yep.
Because I remember when I would get allowance from Grandpa for taking my pills, like my vitamins.
Yeah, your vitamins.
Every day.
Pay off for vitamins.
And he would give me like $20 a week or something. And I would just like save it up. And then I'd be like, Mom, do you want to go to a concert? And I was in like middle school. Yep. And we would just go, like, we went to Warp Tour. Yep. We saw Blink 182 and My Chemical Romance.
I just want to say that the Warp Tour, that was literally hotter than Satan's ball sack.
That was quite literally one of the most unpleasant concerts I have been to. Just because it was so incredibly hot in Chicago. It was.
Yeah. And it was on asphalt. And there was no shade.
Black asphalt in July or whenever is not
like 115 degrees with no shade. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. And everybody's like crammed in there like sardines in a goddamn can.
Exactly.
Just like fucking jumping around and screaming with their sweaty asses. Terrible.
Oh, that almost made me throw up. It made me think of that movie where they were playing basketball and the guy comes down and the other guy gets all that hair from his chest in his mouth.
I remember that. What movie is that?
Greg had that experience at a concert we went to in a mosh pit. Yeah, somebody was dancing like that with his shirt off and he got a mouthful of the dude's sweaty chest hair.
I would literally sue them for damages emotionally.
I am scarred.
And mentally and physically, probably. I'd probably puke. I would definitely puke. I don't even know what I should probably. It's not a question. That would be so fucking nasty.
You could start coughing up hairballs. Yum, 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 yum. So let me ask you, like, what is it that got you interested in the medical field?
I think probably you being in the medical field, honestly, just because like, I remember when I was little, I would go to work with you and that was pretty cool. Like I would get to sit there with all the nurses and stuff while they were out there in the office space. And I really liked that because I got to learn a lot of different things and I got to see some pretty cool things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in high school, they had the health careers program that you could do your senior year. And so I did that and I went to a lot of different places. I worked in a lot of different areas and then that kind of solidified it.
So did you like doing that when you were doing the rounds? Is there any place that you worked while doing that you liked better than others?
My favorite place that I ever worked was at the funeral home, which sounds crazy and creepy, so do not judge me.
It's not creepy.
I really loved the people that I worked with there, and I think that's probably one of the biggest parts of it. That's probably why I enjoyed it so much. But I also saw some really cool stuff while I was there. and it was awesome. It was
so expound on that. Like, what do you mean by really cool stuff? Like, what kind of stuff did you get to do?
Well,
do
I definitely, I definitely have been. I've went in there to pick people up from like the coroner's office before.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been I've been around a lot of dead bodies, which sounds crazy. I've been there and taken people to the crematory. Like, that sounds even worse. Oh God. Oh my God. We're going down a dark path.
Things that make you go,
I wish I could just take back the past minutes, but okay.
But it's not weird because do you remember me telling you about me working in the morgue as a autopsy assistant?
No.
Oh, yeah. That was, and I know people are going to be like, oh my God, that's like creepy and whatever. But it, to me, like the human body is just amazing. And so I actually got to help do autopsies, you know, where they're like cut you open and they take out your organs and they weigh them and you get to hold them and examine them and stuff. And I know that's weird for some people, but it's mesmerizing to me, not in a creepy serial killer kind of way, but you know what I'm saying? Cause I'm certainly not a creepy serial killer. But it's just like amazing to me to see like the inner workings of the body, because like a book, especially when you're going to school, a book doesn't do stuff justice. And yeah, so when you actually get to see stuff, did you get to see anything like that? Like an actual organ?
Oh yeah. Or anything like that? I got to see that when I was in high school, but I definitely also saw that at the funeral home.
Yeah.
I saw like a lot of the times the bodies that we would pick up had been autopsied.
Right.
And I remember we picked up a guy one time that had been hit by a train.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that was crazy. And I mean, I live in Indiana and there's a lot of opioid use here. And we picked up a lot of people that had overdosed on heroin. And I remember picking up someone that was purple one time. Like, his skin was literally purple. And I was like, oh my goodness. But I sat there while they embalmed the individuals before. I've seen that. It's kind of interesting.
So was that like really cool to watch that? Cause I've never actually seen that before.
It is pretty cool. It's a little bit overwhelming because there's so much going on and there are a lot of smells going on. You're using a lot of chemicals, but you're also, I mean, cutting open a body and replacing, well, not necessarily cutting open a body, but
right.
You're replacing like the fluids in that body with embalming fluids. And so there's like a lot of natural smells that are going on there as well as like the chemical smells. And it's just nauseating kind of, but it's so interesting to see how it works and how you like give an individual their pigmentation back after they've passed away.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds kind of interesting, but when you pass away, your body, the pigmentation goes away, you lose color.
Right.
So there are like different shades that we would pick, depending on the individual's ethnicity and race. And we would try to match that and bring the color back to them. And that I always was like so surprised that that was something that you could do. I was shocked.
Did you ever get a burn victim?
I don't think so. I don't remember ever having. Well, no, I never had a burn victim, but I did work in the like burn clinic at Union Hospital during my rotation in my senior year of high school, and I did not like it. And I left like immediately. I worked one day and I was like, I don't want to go back.
Yeah, that and you know, like doing all kinds of trauma and stuff like that, those things don't affect me. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, that's a new, like, oh, that gunshot's a new one. Or, hey, you just sliced your limbs off with a piece of sheet metal or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. But the worst thing for me is burns. Because the smell is ungodly.
Yeah, I remember when they were changing the bandage.
Yeah.
Of an individual while I was in the burn clinic. That's what made me not want to be there anymore.
Yeah, it's really hard. And anybody
so bad too.
Do you remember when I told you, like, if you're going to be working around gross stuff, to keep a little jar of Vicks in your pocket to put on your under your nose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like and peppermint oil.
Yes. And that's like I learned that when I was in the morgue being an autopsy assistant. I was like, ooh, there would be times like they would, you know, like the doctor would start to do something after I cut somebody open and he'd nick the bowel or something. Oh,
oh God.
Sweet baby Jesus. Yeah. I to this day, I do not do well with anything that remotely resembles poop smell. I remember doing my clinicals at school. It was like a funny ha-ha. I got all of the deceased people, which that was no big deal with me. I could handle that. And I got anybody and everybody that had issues with poop. And I remember one time they sent me in this patient's room and they're like, you're going to have to get her up and put her on the bedside commode. And, you know, she has this really massive stomach infection. And I... ooh, could not get her there in time because she was a hefty lift, and I was by myself. And anyway, she did, and it went not only all over the floor, it went all over the bed. And you know those cloth curtains that you pull between the beds? It went all up the curtain. Oh,
my God. Mm-hmm. Was there a patient in the other side?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Ugh. To be and that I was,
and I did not have Vicks that day, and I learned like super quick, like always
said
carry
we need
it.
To get it immediately.
Yes, always, always. I'm going to the gift shop at lunch. No, do you carry Vicks like by the case? Yeah, and I learned like super quick. Always carry a tiny container of that, or even like the Carmex. Works if it has if it has the right scent, because that way you can only smell that and not the other stuff, because there's been times I've smelled some awful things in from a lot of different areas, let's just say, that have made me vomit or want to vomit. Yeah, not a good look when you're throwing up in front of your patients.
If it's a patient or a person
that's already deceased, it's okay. But yeah, you can't do that in front of live people.
Oh my.
And by the way, these are the kind of conversations we have all the time, because we're pretty much two peas in a pod, I would say. And there's not a whole lot that we disagree on. We do disagree sometimes. But I kind of feel like I never chastise you. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
Yeah. I'm not here to judge other people, because, you know, life is too short and none of us are perfect and everybody makes mistakes and everybody's got a right to choose their own path in life and do their own stuff, make their own decisions. And like some people that we know who do not feel that way. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
So would you say after going through high school and going through college, because I know things have changed like greatly since I went to school, did you notice like them pushing any kind of weird agendas or, you know, like weird information that's not normal? I remember a time when you were in middle school and you came home and you had a question like on the Great Wall of China or something. And I'm like, well, look it up. And you're like, but where? It's not in my book. And I'm like, the internet. And I'm like, what do you mean it's not in your book? And it was like pushing stuff. And it was a history class. And it was like about Michael Jackson and, you know, all kinds of stuff that didn't matter. Do you remember that conversation?
No, but I do remember learning about like a lot of things like that, like pop icons, like pop culture icons.
Yeah. Yeah, and what the hell does that have to do with history? Did you learn anything about actual history, like say like the Constitution or the Founding Fathers, or you know, certain wars, or like the Declaration of 1776 or anything like that? Do you remember learning any of that, or was it just like, to me, it's just weird shit. What did you learn? Weird shit or actual history?
I think I remember learning a lot about the wars. We've learned a lot about the wars in high school, and like the different presidents and the founding fathers, and a little bit about like different important documents, such as like the Declaration of Independence and Common Sense, and a lot of documents like that. But I learned more about that stuff when I was in college. In college at IU, where I was taking like the history class, I had a political science class, and that's where I learned a lot more about different articles and like how the government is set up and how that works, and
but you're like pretty
the election
smart.
Process. Yeah, I guess
you're I would say, and I'm not just saying this because I'm your mom, but I'm just saying you're pretty close to genius level, and you have always been able to decipher like basically like propaganda and not and like agenda wise and not, and like in your classes, do they stress critical thinking? Do they teach that, or is that something that you just have just because you kind of learned that at home?
They want you to have critical thinking skills, but I don't know how much they teach you about those skills, or like about how to acquire and like strengthen those skills.
Right.
But yet all of the questions that we have, they want a critical response to. But I know like a lot of my peers in my program, like, and outside of my program, they don't necessarily have those critical thinking skills. Because that's not something that they were taught when they were in school. And it's not something that they were necessarily taught at home either.
So let me ask you, this was like the funniest thing to me, but do you remember when I was teaching and you were sitting there with me while I was grading papers and you're reading? Yes, I was just going to say that. Okay, so the way that I teach, I always try to teach in a critical thinking manner and make you think, okay, so if this happens, like what is going to be the outcomes past that? Or, you know, like open up a whole thing, not just thinking in this little tiny box. And so I remember you got such a chuckle out of that because you're sitting there with me while I'm grading papers. And somebody put that on their response, and I don't even remember what the question is, but we literally laughed about that for hours because that was one of the students' response. And keep in mind, this is a medical class, and it was Jesus in a cup. And we're just like, what the? She's like, what the fuck?
I'm like,
these are brilliant minds. Wink, wink.
Leading the future of medicine.
I know, right?
It's a little scary.
If you put two parts of Jesus in a cup. Just kidding.
It equals one big part.
Boy, I had some doozy students that they didn't know math, they didn't know reading, but yet They were college.
You would be surprised how many people don't know like basic English, like grammar, spelling
at a college level, and then they have to write papers. And I'm reading their papers, and I'm like, oh, pardon my language, but Jesus fuck, holy crap! Like, what did they learn in school all of these years? Because like they would turn in papers in like text speak. And I'm like, I ran out of red pens so many times. I was like, redo this. What is this? Actually spell out your words. Use proper grammar. Use proper English. Learn how to spell words. If you don't know how to spell words, look it up. Because if you're going to be in a profession in the medical field, you better know. Seriously. Yeah. I would get some very interesting students.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a lot of abbreviations like that when I was a teaching assistant for the freshmen and like the transfer students. But normally it was students that were from out of state, like on the West Coast in the California area, or even like on the East Coast sometimes and over in New York. Right. It seems like the education system is just so different there. And
right.
I've never really understood that, but I also have a lot of people that I'm like in my school program that don't know how to spell or like use proper grammar. Like they have run on sentences. And like, I was in a group project with someone that plagiarized recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally was like, you have to redo this or I'm not going to include it because it is literally plagiarism. Like, genuinely copy and paste with no citation.
Right.
And it's
how do you feel? Because I know you and I've had this discussion a lot. And this is like a big thing in the workforce now, where it's like this giant shift to like everybody working in groups and you have to do group projects.
I do not want group projects.
I don't either. And I don't understand it. Greg can't stand it. I can't stand it because you're always going to have those people in your group that are lazy or, pardon my saying so, but uneducated, don't care, don't give a fuck, waiting for everybody else just to do all the work and they're just going to coast.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes me feel like, that's kind of the generation, not saying you, but that's kind of the generation that's been built, is that it's okay for you to just coast and skate by because everybody's going to still pass you.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what's been going on in schools for a long time. And I don't understand that because you're passing all of these people through all of these grades and, you know, elementary school, middle school, junior high school, whatever, and then passing them through college, which they never should be passed through a class, and then they're going to put them in the workforce.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, as a medical person, and you've just been passed your entire life, do you want somebody like that taking care of you? Or do you want somebody that knows what they're doing to take care of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely would rather have someone that knows what they're doing rather than someone that just skated by the entire time.
So,
like, C's get degrees, but they shouldn't.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
That is a perfect saying. It absolutely is a perfect saying. So what is it that you do now, or what are you going for now, and what did you want to do before that?
Right now I'm going in the social work field to work in mental health and addictions counseling, or potentially social work with the prison population.
Right.
And before that, I had so many other career pathways. I was in psychology when I came to college. Before that, I was looking at business. Before that, I was back in the medical field. I talked about being an oncologist. I talked about being a heart doctor. I talked about, a cardiologist, I talked about being a nurse. I wanted to be a teacher, a veterinarian, a teacher. I already said a teacher. God.
Now, do you remember, like, when you were talking about wanting to be a doctor, do you remember the discussions that we had regarding liability for your profession and, you know, how much the profession was changed? And it's like, okay, it's mandated now that you have to, like, prescribe so many drugs to be able to get a benefit from the government, or you have to, you know, see so many patients in an hour, or, you know, you get penalized. Do you remember those conversations that we had?
Yeah, I especially remember a lot about, like, you have to see so many people within a certain amount of time.
Right.
I know, because I remember, like, I am a pretty patient person, but I become very impatient when I'm at the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
Because I firmly believe that if you have an appointment at one,
right,
you should around one. You shouldn't be sitting in the waiting room until 1:45 and then going back in the other room waiting for the doctor until 2:30.
Right.
Like, you should be seen in a timely fashion, which it doesn't make any sense, because they're trying to pressure you to see so many people within an hour anyway. And so it's either, like, the doctors are taking way too long, they're being too thorough, like, patients, it's causing them to be behind, or it's on the other hand where
scheduling too many people.
Yeah, you're scheduling too many people.
Yeah.
And we
had that problem at the end of, you know, me working at the teaching hospital. It was like, you know, mandated by Obama, this new coding system and this new system of seeing patients where you had to see so many an hour, and it was government mandated. And if you didn't meet those quotas, then you got penalized. You also got penalized if you didn't use electronic software, and you got penalized if you didn't prescribe so many medications a month, and all this other stuff. But it got to the point where, like, when they put in the computer systems and stuff, most of the computers, you have your back to the patients. So you can't keep contact with the patients while you're typing. And then they would make us schedule patients, like, literally every 5 minutes. And I'm like, in what world have you ever been to the doctor where you went in the waiting room, you signed up, you had a seat, they got you back super quick, you got in a room really quick, and then they, you know, you saw the doctor super fast and you were in and out in 5 minutes.
I've never had an experience like that. I probably won't. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never either. I've gone to cardiology appointments before where my appointment was at 8 o'clock in the morning, and at 4 o'clock I was still sitting in the waiting room.
I would die.
Yeah, it was a long day.
Or someone else would die.
Hungry? Yeah. Killer clown posse. And it makes you nuts, because then you don't get to eat, and then you're sitting there and you get grumpy and you get irritated and you're hungry and you got to pee and you got to poop, and you know, you have, like, all these other things to do, and you're like, oh, nope, still waiting. Oh, you haven't even been in a room yet. Well, I'm sure somebody will be with you shortly. And you're like, shortly this month or shortly in the next century?
Yeah. Yeah. What does shortly mean?
I'm getting hangry. Give me a Snickers bar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They should have food on premise. If they're having appointments like that. But that's one of the things I remember that we talked about. When you told me you wanted to be a doctor, and I'm like, you can literally do anything you want to do, but here are some things to think about.
Yeah.
And then you changed your mind. And I'm fine with that.
So tell me
what made you feel like you were pulled toward doing social work?
I remember I was taking an introductory psychology course, and it combines, like, Psych 101 and Psych 102, and it was called Psych 155. And I liked psychology, but I hated that class more than I have ever hated anything in my life in terms of school.
Right.
And I just thought it was so boring. The professor did not do a great job at actually explaining material, but yet would put everything on the exam, stuff that you didn't even cover. And
you mean like subtitles from pictures? Have you ever had that before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very specific things. Almost like, what did they say? Minute 4 and 2 seconds in that film. And you're like, shit, I don't know.
Like, you're like, I don't remember. I don't remember what you told me 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, I saw that clip 4 years ago. I have no idea. Like, it doesn't
You're
make
senile
any sense.
Like I am. It's fantastic.
I am. But I remember they also made us sign up to do different like experiments and different studies. We had to be like research subjects.
Right.
And that was okay, but I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And they were just like, more research, more research, more research. And I was like, nope.
And you're like, kill me now.
Yeah, I said, I don't think that's for me. So I talked to my academic advisor, who was also my scholarship coordinator, and she said that I should do social work instead, or said that that was a similar field where I could do similar things with a social work degree, but I wouldn't have to actually do all that research.
Right.
So I applied to the social work program, and here I am now.
Yeah, because research papers, for anybody that has never had to do like box loads full of them, good for you. For those of us that have, it's a life-changing experience that makes you literally want to reevaluate everything about your life. That's why. Yeah, that's why when I tell you guys I'm a researcher, I am. And that's why I have to unplug a lot of times, because when I bring you a really deep topic, sometimes it's overwhelming, the amount of research and the amount of clogging of your brain that goes into that.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I'm saying, it's like a brain sewer going on. Yeah. So those are not fun. It's not fun times when you have to do that kind of stuff like all day, every day, multiple times, and especially for multiple classes, it sucks. So, being in the social work field, like what have you experienced? Like, have you seen, like I did in the nursing field, where there's a bunch of people that absolutely, completely should never, ever work around a patient?
Oh, yeah. All the time. You see people and you're just like, why the hell did you choose this field? Because you don't care. You don't care about the patients. You know, they're just not dedicated. They don't have the patient's best interest in mind. And it's just like, why? You could have had any other career. Why did you choose a helping profession?
Do you ever feel like it's almost like opposite day when you look at coworkers and stuff and you're like, wow, I see it clearly now. You actually really hate everybody. This is a great job for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've definitely seen some things like that where you're just like, it's almost narcissistic in a way. And you're just like, oh gosh, like you should not be around patients. Because you don't,
or children, or small animals, or
yes,
pretty much anyone else.
Anyone, yeah. You should just isolate.
We should just
be nicer.
Yeah, we should just put you in a box somewhere. I don't know. So, are a lot of those people that you're around in your profession? Are they? Do you feel like they're actually pro patient? And there to actually uphold their oath and help people? Or do you feel like a lot of them are very anti-patient?
I think that there are a lot of people that are pro-patient, but I also think that there are some people that are anti-patient. I think that there are so many factors that can influence how an individual feels and how they advocate
right.
for other people. And a lot of the times people start out in the field and they're energetic and they're excited and like they're ready to advocate and change some shit. But then like that fire, that passion kind of goes away over time if you're not like practicing self-care and taking right. care of your actual self, you know, like right. physically, mentally, emotionally. And right. so then you can just kind of get burnt out and lose empathy. And then that's when you start seeing people that are almost anti-patient, where they don't think that the patient can succeed. And it's like, if you don't think the patient can succeed, how can we expect the patient to believe in themselves?
Right.
You know, like the patient, it's our job to support them and encourage them and help them get to the place that they need to be by giving them those resources and tools. And if you don't even believe in their success, it's really hard to encourage them and motivate them to achieve right. that success on their own.
Right. And you and I have talked about that many times before, like how important it is to always take time for yourself and center yourself and ground yourself, because in our chosen professions, you see so many things that you wish you've never seen. They're very devastating, very traumatic to you personally, especially when you see like reported and repeated cases of child abuse or child rape or, you know, whatever it is, you name it, or, you know, spousal abuse, things like that, where it's like they keep letting the offender out of jail and it keeps happening over and over and over. There's so many things that we see on a regular basis that are just so heavy on the soul, that we've had a lot of conversations personally, you and I, about how important it is for your own mental health to take a step back and regroup and re-energize yourself and focus on you and do things that bring back your positive energy and bring back your way of thinking, basically like your grounding, right?
Yeah.
We've had a lot of conversations like that because, you know, it's important, like super important that you do things like that. And one of the things I told patients or told listeners about one time was we were talking about different kind of therapies that you can use where, especially even for anxiety, depression, things like that, which a lot of times set in when you're, you know, a healthcare worker of any sort, but especially social work and anything where you're directly dealing with the public, and not always the pretty side of the public a lot of times, yeah. is like art therapy type stuff where you're doing all of your senses and you can smell the paints or, you know, whatever material you're working with, and you're visualizing it and you do it with your hands. And so you have all these different senses involved, which is a fantastic thing. Art therapy is amazing because when you engage all of these different senses together, it releases endorphins, which are your happy chemicals, which that kind of stuff is very helpful for people a lot of times, or journaling or, you know, whatever. And so when you like, one of the things I think needs to be addressed, and you may be okay with this, you may not be, we didn't talk about this beforehand. But like all of the, murders and stuff and defunding police and whatnot. And now they want, they don't want to send police. They want to send a social worker.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a social worker should be, the first line when somebody's wielding a gun?
I think it depends. I think that it would be very beneficial to have a social worker, because I think that the social worker is more trained in crisis de-escalation techniques.
Right.
Because police, they do go through some training, but I don't think that their training is as extensive as it should be, which means that sometimes in those high stress situations, they're not as well equipped to handle things like that. I mean, they can obviously handle it, but is it being handled the way that we want it to be handled or the way that it should be handled? No. If there's a way to prevent that death, then I think that we should try to do that. But at the same time, we don't want to risk anyone's safety.
So do you think it would be smart to put like social workers in with the police? Because like, you know, like my concern, especially as a parent, I wouldn't want you to be the first line sent in with no police presence or anything, and you're just sent in and somebody's got like an AR-15 or like a giant machete or, you know, whatever. Do you think that maybe social workers should be part of like a community type team?
Yes, I definitely, I know there are a lot of different things like that, like ACT community teams that have a bunch of people from different professions, like a mental health professional.
Did you just say pigs? Piggles?
Huh?
It sounded like you said, they have a bunch of community piggles. I was going to correct your grammar, young lady.
I know. They have a bunch of different professions that come together in a community team. Sorry, there's a siren out there. But a bunch of different professions that come together in a team to try to de-escalate some of those situations.
They're, or at least to try to. You.
I have not done anything wrong.
Not to today.
Not to today. That's true. Or is it? I don't know. But I know like the police department here has hired a social worker.
Right.
And they go out on a lot of case calls together. And I think that that's really beneficial. But right. I definitely agree that it would be helpful to have some sort of plan in place so that there is like a backup, you know, if the social worker is sent in there by themselves. I understand the purpose of sending someone in by themselves, just to kind of, for the, like the power dynamics, you don't want to have like five police officers in there with one
right.
man, right. you know, that's extremely, or not necessarily a man, but an individual that's extremely worked up that has a gun, because that would obviously intimidate them, and he would feel, or that individual would feel very afraid, and violence could potentially erupt from that. So I think that I do see the purpose of sending in just a social worker, but like I think that there should be people on standby that are ready, and that maybe there's like a code word, or that there's some type of like spy. Not spy, that sounds weird, but like then like there's a way for them to there's a way for them to observe the situation and see when they need to potentially intervene.
Right. But you're and that's why I wanted to ask you that question, because you're not anti-police, right?
No, I definitely think that the police are important. They're very essential for a lot of things, but I also see that there are a lot of problems with the police. Like there are not a lot of requirements to be a police officer.
Oh, right.
And right. It's like, I definitely think there should be reform in that sense. Like maybe we should require them to have a criminal justice degree. I don't
is
know.
Is it okay with you? If I mention one person that we know in common and why it would be a really great idea if they were never a police officer?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
I probably.
Yeah. Starts with a D.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's see. How do I put this in a tactful manner? Let's just say, somebody that was very close to the both of us, was a career drunk, a career user, abuser, extremely violent, verbally, physically, you name it, was investigated multiple times for trafficking, etc. And then applied to be a state police officer. And guess what? He made it through the first couple rounds to be a state police trooper. It's disturbing to me because I'm in complete and total agreement, especially where we came from. The regulations are very lax, and they have a lot of, number one, sexual predators, number two, physical abusers, things like that. I don't think that's okay, because if he would have ever gotten to that point where he was, I can tell you it would have not been good for anybody that ever came in contact with him, because a lot of people would have got hurt. And I'm not.
I agree.
Like, we're in the agreement on the situation. Police are wonderful. I will always back the police. You know that. Everybody that knows me knows that. Listeners know that. But there are some things that could be helpful. And we're trying to help from our end on our standpoint of, like, I sure as shit don't want to be a frontline if somebody's got a AK-47 pointed at me or whatnot. I don't want to go in there as the first resort by any means. And I don't want her to, because, you know, she's my goober and I love her. But things to think about are like putting people in place. Like, a lot of the doctor's offices now actually have, like here, have social workers on staff now. Because when you're in that field, and a lot of people don't see that, coming in just as a patient, but on our end, ooh, that's really necessary in a lot of places. And especially people that are really good at their job, and where people aren't going to fall through the cracks and aren't going to fall through the system and aren't going to be repeatedly put back in the same, dangerous or toxic situations and stuff. And so for her and I, it's important for you guys to see our view and where it's coming from, in the aspect that we're here to help, and we want to help in any way that we can. And so anyway, I just thought that was an important thing for us to talk about. So
I do want to say something else.
Yes.
I just want to say that I think so much violence would be avoided if social workers were added to the police force, able to work with the police officers. I think that defunding the police is
stupid.
A bad term that gets, and there's a lot of bad stigma associated with it, because, I mean, it just sounds bad. Like, defunding the police sounds bad, but I understand and I agree with the reallocation of certain resources. Like, I don't
certain
think we should
ones,
take
not all
of
them.
I don't
right.
think we should take all of the police funding away, but I do think the police get paid way too much and don't have enough training to be paid that much. Like,
actually, a lot of the, like,
but not,
regular.
No, like, they don't get, not their personal salary, but like their budget. Right. They have too much money in the police budget.
Well,
not
and I think
a lot, for the specific officers.
Yeah, and I was going to say, because the officers themselves don't make shit. They're like teachers.
Yeah.
And that's a thing to always remember. When you have a very bloated budget, and that budget is not going to things that make things better, like body cams and tactical training and, you know, whatever. But miraculously, it's kind of like the money from the State Department or a lot of other places where you got, oh my God, we have $476 billion in our budget. Oh, geez, oops. Like $472 billion of that went missing. And yeah, we don't know where it went.
Mm-hmm.
It's an overbloatation and a lot of corruption. In a lot of stuff. And it's not just, we're not saying it's police only. That happens in everything.
With any government. Well,
that happens.
Yeah,
yes.
Literally anything.
Exactly.
But a lot
exactly.
of government agencies.
Yeah.
Are like
100,000%. And, you know, like a lot of people are be like, oh my God, well, the healthcare budget, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I never got rich off of being a nurse, never got rich off of being a teacher.
Yeah.
Like worst, you know, two like seriously underpaid things, just like social work is. You don't get enough pay, you don't get enough credit, but by golly, the leaders of the universities or the leaders of a quote organization bring in millions of dollars a year in their salary. That is not a trickle down. That does not come to your staff.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that does not translate, budgets don't translate into equipment either.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind, because Kirsten and I have both seen that. Like, whew, there's a lot of stuff that are supposed to be allocated funds for that you, excuse me, had a burp, that you don't see.
Yeah.
Oh, stop. You know I burp. I don't burp as... I can burp you the alphabet. I will burp I love you by the end of this. No, I'm kidding. She knows. She just deals with my bodily melodies that I play for her on a regular basis. She's used to it. So, question... Have you ever seen any instances that were questionable in any of the medical stuff or rotations that you have ever done?
Definitely. I specifically remember a time where we received a client at a substance abuse center who came there, and as soon as we get clients, we immediately give them a breathalyzer and an instant drug screen. And so the client like just could not go to the restroom at all. And she was very stressed out, like extremely worried because she couldn't go to the bathroom, and she was just freaking out. And she was like, oh my gosh, you know, I have to pass this test. And the staff members kept telling her that she only had a certain amount of time to go to the restroom, or otherwise they were going to count her test as positive. And at first I didn't understand what that was. That it was later explained to me that that's just part of the agency policy, is that the client has 2 hours to complete a drug screen or else it will be marked as positive. But I feel like it should be marked as like incomplete instead of
right.
positive.
I agree.
Because it wasn't positive. The client just wasn't able to produce a urine sample at that time. But that doesn't mean that the client is on drugs or alcohol.
Right.
And I
right.
feel like saying that has some really serious implications that people don't understand. Like, if that is reported to a client's public defender or like attorney or like the court
right.
system,
they can
that
get
client
trouble
can get
that.
In a lot of trouble. Like that client could
right.
potentially lose their children. That client could lose like their housing, their job, like their freedom. They could be put in jail. There are
right.
so many things that could go wrong with that. And I was absolutely baffled when I was witnessing this and when I heard about this policy, because I feel like it's our job to try to make, you know, advocate for the client and help the client. And I was just so concerned about why we would mark something positive if it wasn't actually positive.
Right. And to me, and we discussed that, and, you know, never going to mention the facility or anything like that, but I'm just saying, to me, that's fraudulent because, number one, people have pee shyness. I personally don't. I could literally pee right now while we're talking. You would hear me. I could record it for you. It would be beautiful music. I could put like, you know, like Mozart or something behind it while I'm peeing.
Peaceful waterfall sound.
Yeah, exactly.
But with a flute in the background.
But I know, being a nurse, that some people, when they come in and you're like, you have to pee. Oh my God, you better pee. Or, you know, like somebody comes in with a blocked stool and like they're having trouble pooping. You can't like demand them to poop and wish it to be so. And all of a sudden it just comes out and whatever. No, the more you tell them.
That's not how it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, the more you tell them.
Your bladder will shrink up. Like.
Yes. It's because the way that your body works, when somebody's like demanding that you do something, your muscles tense up. Your bladder is a muscle. All of your organs are muscles. And so when they're yelling at you, you got to pee, and you got to pee in the next 2 minutes, by God, or we're going to mark you positive. And we're going to say you're on drugs, even though you're not, because you're not peeing. That automatically releases those hormones, those chemicals, makes your bladder like, you know, clamp down super hard. And your bladder's like, okay, motherfucker. You want me to pee? I am not going to pee now. Mm-mm. It's kind of like all the fecal hoarders that, you know, don't want to poop because you told them they have to poop. And they're like, mm-mm. You know what I'm saying? You cannot.
Yeah.
You cannot. And you have to be a human. And in any kind of healthcare or in any job, just be a human. And understand, like, how would you feel if somebody was yelling at you to do something, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, just be fucking nice. Like, I don't understand why it's so hard and why that went out the window to be nice. Yeah. I don't get it. So have you ever experienced like verbal abuse of anybody in any of the healthcare stuff you've ever done?
Not at my current facility, but I briefly worked at a place, like very briefly, like no more than a day. Worked at a place where I saw some like very questionable, I wouldn't call it abuse, but like the language that they used around the clients was just a little bit unprofessional, like cursing and calling, like, not the client's names, but like calling each other names, because some of the clients had intellectual and developmental disabilities, and so those clients pick up on that language,
pick that up, and then they
stick to that language. They grasp, you know, they grasp onto it, and they just keep repeating it and repeating it at the most inappropriate times. And it's because they don't understand, and they don't understand that it's not okay to say those things. And so the problem was like role modeling that behavior to the clients, and then the clients engaging in that behavior that was role modeled to them.
Right. And that's the sad thing, is that these are things that, and I'm so glad again that you decided to come on with me, because these are things that the general public doesn't think about. In terms of healthcare stuff, or, you know, like our healthcare system, or whatever, not everybody has the same, intellectual level or the same, like mentality, I guess you want to say. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but here's an example. Okay. And this is the, you cannot ever assume anything about anyone or about all of your people. You can't. like our doctor, somebody would come in, they were vomiting all the time, et cetera, et cetera. And so they can't obviously take a pill by mouth to stop the vomiting because they can't stop throwing up. And so they would be prescribed a anti-nausea suppository. Suppositories go up your butt. When people would go and pick them up from the pharmacy, and for those of you who never have seen one, it's shaped like a bullet, and it's in a really hard foil package. Keep that in mind. It comes in like a rectangular package. And we would have patients that would go pick them up, and then when they would call us back, and they're like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know what to do, Janet, because my butt is bleeding. And I'm like, okay. I need to know when you picked up your medication before you inserted the suppository, did you take the foil wrapper off the outside? And they were like, take the foil wrapper off? Like, I didn't know you were supposed to take that off. And so you have to explain everything to everybody in terms that they can understand. Never assume that everybody knows, like, you know, like on our intake forms or whatnot, when you're typing in your stupid medical records electronically about whatever somebody came in for, and they're like, did you defecate today? You cannot ask a patient, did you defecate? Because a lot of patients don't know what that means.
Yeah.
So you have to say, did you poop? Which sounds highly unprofessional, but you have to explain things and put terms in ways that people can understand. And so never assume people's intellectual thing. Just like Kirsten said, these people, there's a lot of people that would come in that pick up on things that other people say. That's why office staff should never, ever like be negative or speak bad about the practice or bad about the doctor or bad about other employees or anything like that where other people can hear you.
Yeah.
Because people that aren't on that same level will repeat things like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's very true.
Dr. Smith is a pecker. Dr. Smith is a pecker. Dr. Smith is a pecker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know who Dr. Smith is. I just made that up. But you know what I'm saying. So let me ask you another question, because I know you've had experience in this. Do you feel with the medications that you have been prescribed for certain things, do you feel like there are side effects or issues with the medication that you're given?
I don't really experience any side effects as long as I'm taking it, but I do experience some side effects whenever I stop taking it. Like recently, a few weeks or probably about 2 months ago, there was a day where I forgot to take my medicine. There was also a day where I couldn't take my medicine because I was very sick and I was throwing up. I couldn't keep anything down, and not taking my medicine actually made me even more sick, and I continued to throw up and have gastrointestinal problems, and it was extremely unpleasant. Like, I would have nausea, headaches, I couldn't eat anything, my stomach was really upset, but then, like, it just makes you even sicker because, like, you're not able to eat anything, and it's just a cycle of problems. But when I started taking my medication again, I didn't have any more problems.
Okay.
Wood.
So do you ever feel like, your medication is fighting itself? And here's what I mean by that. Like I talked about this before in great detail where, like now the new norm quote is diagnosing with people with depression and anxiety at the same time. They're completely polar opposites. They're not the same thing. Depression, like, you're really sad. You don't want to get up. You don't want to do anything. You have no energy. You have no desire, blah, blah, blah. anxiety, your body's in like a heightened state of wound up. You're worried about everything. Like your body feels like it's in hyperdrive. No one should ever have the two things at the same time. And so they prescribe medications for two things that are completely opposite. And so one is to like basically excite your system to get it to like start performing and get you out of bed and get you up and going and give you energy and you rah, 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 go team. The other medication that's you're given, you just need to sit down. You need to calm down. You need to relax. Just chill out and like, calm, bro. You know what I'm saying? And then, so they're like the two medications and the two quote diagnoses are constantly like battling and fighting it out. And your body doesn't know what the fuck to do. Your body is thrown completely off balance. And it's like, am I supposed to be excited? Am I supposed to be like, go to bed? Am I supposed to like, oh my God, everything's awful? Or am I supposed to be like, man, let's go party and chill? And so like the hormones aren't released properly because they're completely always fighting together. And one of the important things to remember is when that you diagnose people with both and you put them on those two different completely clashing classes of medication. How many patients have you heard say, I don't feel like it's helping. Like I need something else. Like it's not getting any better. Like I don't feel like it's working. I'm super anxious today. Oh my God. Like I am massively depressed today. It's because your body doesn't know what to do. And it's in a constant state of like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck are you doing to me? I don't, like, hello? You ever see that, I can't remember what it was. It was an internet video with Jenna Marbles. And it was like, with her dog. And it was like, what are this?
Yeah.
What are this? What are this? And it's like, that's what your body is like all the time when it's on medications that are competing with like superiority for a day. Like today, anxiety is king. Tomorrow, depression is king. The next day, I don't know who is king. I don't know. Oh, it's a draw. It's a tie. And so, like medications are my thing. I hate medicine. I hate vaccinations because I know what they do to your body. But have you ever felt like anything they've ever put you on is like, oh, it's supposed to be a miracle cure and it's supposed to take like all of my headaches away or supposed to take away, you know, all of my pain or whatever. Have you ever felt like it was like a never ending like battle where it's like everything they tell you is not exactly true?
I feel that way about certain things. I wonder if like my migraine medication works. But it's like, I feel like they're telling me the truth, but I also feel like they don't know enough about migraine injections yet at this point to like,
right,
know about its sustained long-term effects and
right,
long-term benefits, because my medication does help, but I have to take an injection every 28 days. Right. And like, once I start getting to about 21 days, I start having migraines because my body like is out of the medication.
Because your body's going boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. And so I will start having beep, migraines boop, like every day until I have that new injection. And then even for a little bit after I get the injection, until it starts like going through my system, I'll have migraines again.
And so does it feel like your body was getting used to that medication and now it's like, oh, like this drug is amazing. Oh my God, who needs to wait like that many days. Like, we need to shorten it. Like, oh my God, it should totally be like every 15.
I feel like it's like, okay, maybe, I don't know if the dosage is just not high enough or like, it's not like an extended release, if you know what I mean. But it seems like after I hit like 3 weeks or so, it just is not as effective anymore. But also like stress is constantly changing. New factors are constantly popping up, which right, can also trigger my migraines. Like the weather is so back and forth, which been really problematic lately because that air pressure is just like causing my muscles and my joints to be very sore and inflamed.
Right.
But I feel like I have been diagnosed with anxiety and depression. Yes. And I feel like my medication works, but I feel like I've been on medications before that did not work. And I've heard a lot from my clients about like how their medication is not as effective. And I normally encourage them to change to a different medication. It just seems like certain classifications of medicine are just not as effective as other ones. And I mean, everybody's body chemistry is a little bit different. So the way that you'll react to that medication is different for every person. Right. So it's just so hard to treat a mental health disorder because it's so hard to figure out like a good combination of whether it be like cognitive behavioral therapy and a prescription medication. But like finding that specific medication can be really difficult sometimes because you don't know how your body's going to react to it. You don't know how your brain's going to respond to it and how it's going to process that and if it will actually be effective.
Right.
But I do know like you're talking about competing medications and competing disorders. Right. And I take my anxiety medication in the morning when I wake up because it is supposed to like get me going and get me out of bed, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it does help with that. And then at nighttime I take my depression medication because it helps me calm down and go to sleep, but it also helps sustain my symptoms of depression.
Right.
Or not sustain, but manage and like keep them at a low level, sustain that low level of symptoms.
So this is an area that people that have listened to me obviously know. Her and I are not in total agreement on this just because, you know, like people have heard me talk about this before. But let me ask you a question. And this is your just a personal opinion. What do you think about like stopping medications and only using like high grade marijuana to treat depression, anxiety, headaches, joint pain, things like that? What's your opinion on that?
I definitely see the benefits of it because I think that there would be a lot less physiological side effects associated with consuming marijuana. There's no like physical dependency that you'll have with marijuana, but your brain might become a little bit dependent on it, which is something that's pretty highly debated. But if it makes you feel good and it makes you your body feel better and it's taking away that pain, of course you're going to start to become dependent on it because in a way you're essentially treating a disorder with a medication. I mean, it's not like a pill medication. It's not a prescribed medication, but it is in some states where it's legal.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I do see the benefit of pharmaceutical medication, but I think that like the pharmaceutical industry, I think we can all agree on is pretty shady. Obviously I consume medication, so like I completely see its effects and its purposes and the benefits that it has. But I also believe that there are a lot of doctors out there that overprescribe medication
100%
for all types of things. I mean, especially like the opioid epidemic, that's how that started going crazy is because people are trying to persuade doctors to prescribe more medication. Patients are getting addicted to the medication. The doctors are making more money, and the pharmaceutical industry is booming. And it's just like this cycle that we are constantly in that we can't escape. But I think there's a way that if we used marijuana or even medical marijuana, there's a way that we could try to make revenue from that, but revenue that everybody could benefit from and that people could benefit from when treating those mental disorders as well as physical disorders that they have. Like, I know that it's really supposed to be helpful for arthritis, back pain, migraines.
Right.
Those types of things it's supposed to be really beneficial for. And I definitely, I hear a lot of positive things about it. I know that there could be some negative things, like making sure that it is regulated, but that's just why you do have to make sure that it's regulated. You have to make sure that it's coming from a reliable source where it's tested.
And it's, and that it's high grade.
Yeah. And that it's high grade, that there are no added like chemicals or substances. You know, you don't want to have it laced with anything crazy. You just want straight, good, synthetic marijuana, you know?
Yeah. And for me, I've been looking into this a lot lately because, you know, people were like, oh, hey, it would totally like be beneficial for a lot of the issues that you have. Now, keep in mind, and you guys can look this up. This is a proven fact. It's a scientific thing you can actually look up. Your body has cannabinoid receptors all over the body. It's from the endocannabinoid system, and it has to do a lot with psychological processes, mental health, things of that nature, mood swings, the whole nine yards. Appetite, so appetite suppression, appetite excitation, things like that, pain sensations, moods, memory impairment, which everybody that listens know I have fucking memory impairment. Either that or I'm just a senile old goat. I'm not sure which. I think there may be cobwebs taking over my brain stem. I'm not sure. But that's an actual medical thing. So your body is already set up to receive cannabis. But it has to be the right kind of thing. Like, you cannot go out on the street and buy skunk weed and expect for that to like cure your problems. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't do things like that. And everybody knows that because we've talked about that before. However, would I just to actually feel better and get off of the medications that I don't want to take that unfortunately right now I have to because they're like what's keeping me alive still, supposedly.
Yeah.
Would I? Yes. Although it's expensive and I would have to start doing lots of other things to make money to be able to afford the, you know, edibles and things like that to take care of arthritis and, you know, migraines, because migraines run in our family. We all have them. It's lovely. And, you know, but arthritis with creepy fingers and things like that, that's all part of it too. Kirsten loves my creepy finger. So, anyway, but I just want to say, I appreciate you so much for coming on today and being very open and, honest. 'Cause like I said, we mostly agree, but we don't always on things. And, it's good to get a lot of viewpoints out there and, just to kind of let our listeners know that, you know, that you're like my life and you're my number one goober in the world. And I love you so much. And, I appreciate you coming on. I will not give out her Twitter or anything else because, don't be creepy. Yeah. She's my baby and you can't be creepy like that. So I'm not going to do that. But I want to say, Thank you again for coming on. I want to tell the listeners, Mama's got a new Twitter after her last Twitter purge for being a security risk. I have a new one. It's at no, K-N-O-W, Janet, J-A-N-E-T. So make sure you follow that, of course, Deplorable Janet on Instagram and Parler. As always, follow, like, download, subscribe, comment, and appreciate the Deplorable Nation because we are here for you guys. So thank you so much, Miss Kirsten, for coming on. I know you're extremely busy all the time, and I love you and appreciate you so much. Final words for you, my dear.
I just want to say thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And it's been really great to be here. I'm really grateful for this opportunity and to just be able to have these conversations, I think, is really important. So thank you so much.
Agreed. So for me and for Kirsten and for Deplorable Nation, thank you again for tuning in for episode 19, and we shall see you again next week. Peace, love, and through God, all things are possible.